Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
One of the things that people don't see or maybe don't quite consider is that like some shoots are so pressurized. Honestly, one of the nicest humans I've ever met is Kaká, like let alone just nicest footballers, nicest people I've ever met.
One of my favorite videos of yours was when you had Marco Reus train you and was there in your ear playing against Vooch, who was trained by Axel Witsel.
At the end, we were like, wow, I think we've got something special here, because we'd never seen anyone do anything like that before. Like, I, to this day, I still haven't seen that.
Like translating for Messi on stage at an Adidas event, speaking French with Zidane several times.
I would not be doing what I'm doing today if it wasn't for languages. The more you're open and the more you're willing to say yes to stuff, and being enthusiastic about just doing things, the more I think you find out about yourself and you expand as a person.
Have you ever had a time in your life where you've had like a mental health challenge to conquer, or have you always been on this like constant journey?
The last 2 months have been like really tough, probably the toughest in my life, just because I involve myself up in so much in my work that if I'm not working, I do just genuinely feel useless.
Yes, people, welcome to the Football and Feelings podcast. Thank you for joining me. I am Liam, your host, as always. I hope you're keeping well and these podcasts are giving you some sort of joy in your day today during these tough times for you. Thank you for joining me. If you've enjoyed this episode, or if you do enjoy it, if you've enjoyed any of the others, feel free to leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. That's a bit of admin there, but we'll get that out of the way. And that's all done. Let me introduce you to my guest for this episode. I'm here with multilinguist, I'm going to say self-improvement maestro. I'm going to go with that. Fantastic presenter, Michael Timms. How are you, my man?
Hello, mate. I'm very good, man. What an intro that is. Wow.
It's a pleasure. What do you want me to call you, by the way? Michael, Timsy, Big Mike.
Big Mike was what I was going to go with originally. Anything, man. Like, Michael's literally my name, but obviously everyone knows me as Timsy. So I'm not fussed.
Okay, great. How are you getting on during this lockdown? What's going on?
I'm good, man. I say I'm good, but that's just like a generic response in it. Like, no one ever really says anything, but I'm good. It's been okay. Like, I think everyone's just looking forward to the end of this lockdown, because it has to be kind of like the final one. So I think everyone's just sitting tight, staying patient, just wait to see what happens in the summer.
Mm-hmm,
but yeah, man, I'll be good. What about yourself?
I'm okay, mate. I'm not too bad. These podcasts have been quite an important part of my lockdown experience, I think, just to break the day up. It's the monotony of these days that is slowly killing me.
100%. Yeah. No, this is good. It's a very good idea. And I think it's quite important as well to have something like this as well. Like, it's not even, you know, for people to listen to and hear different perspectives and stories as well. But like for you as well, as you said, lockdown can get so monotonous. And it kind of like, you know, days just kind of pass by, so it's quite a nice thing, I guess, for you, like a project to work on, you know.
Exactly, mate. I've got a lot to talk about today with you as well, but I want to start with a bit of football chat. Now this episode is going out next week, so we won't keep it too topical, and I apologize to any listeners that aren't Arsenal fans as well. There's going to be a bit of Arsenal topics going on. I'm an Arsenal fan, as is Timsy, but let's get started anyway. I want to know what your first memory of football is being in your life, whether that's as a fan or as a player.
My first memory of football would literally be like playing football as a kid, like playing with my brother in the back garden, or going down to visit my granddad in Eastbourne and playing by the beach there. So it's like, it's obviously, I think for most people, like as a kid, you're playing and you want to impress your dad and you want to play Sunday league and stuff. And then actually watching it would be obviously Arsenal. I went to Highbury quite a few times, but back in like 98, 99, 2000, that sort of stuff. Pretty standard kind of memories, I guess. Nothing special.
Yeah, yeah. Was there like a first Arsenal player that you remember watching?
Tony Adams, probably. I think he was my first, the first Arsenal player that I was sort of connected to in some way, in that obviously he was the skipper. But also in a weird kind of like twist of fate, I guess, me and my family became quite close friends with him because we, when I played Sunday League, so I played Southwest London, so Feltham. And for some reason, his son, called Ollie, played for Feltham as well. And so we're obviously in the same team. And then Tony would come down and watch. And this is kind of peak, I say peak Boozer Adams, but as in just as he was doing his rehab and stuff, you know, just write his book. And Tony and my dad got on really well. Our families kind of spent quite a bit of time together. So I think it was weird how it kind of went from like a few years earlier watching him play. I remember playing, I think maybe getting injured against Wimbledon at home. And then, a few years later, kind of linking up with him and you know, I guess being a pal.
That's mad. Wow. I wasn't expecting that sort of link. I was expecting just, you know, Thierry Henry on the TV.
No, of course. And Thierry as well. Ian Wright, you know, all the standard ones. But Tony was the very first one that I can kind of remember as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favourite player of the present?
Favourite player of the present? I'd say Bukayo, just because he's like the boy wonder, I think, for a lot of us.
I
think the team is quite likable at the moment. So I do like a lot of the boys kind of, and then I, you know, the ones I'm lucky enough and just through work and stuff to actually know, like Emil is a great kid that I've known for a few years and stuff. So it always makes me happy to see someone like Emil succeed and stuff, because, you know, I've wanted him to succeed for so long. So it's nice to see him actually like produce on the pitch.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've got a question about that coming up. The relationships you've built up with some of these players. But first, have you gotten around to reading Arsene Wenger's book?
So, no. And actually, I got it for Christmas. And weirdly, I mean, I should just read it, innit? But I got put off quite a bit by... I had so many rich reviews from like my mate. A lot of my mates are Arsenal fans. I've seen people online, a lot of the journos and a lot of the Arsenal pundits and fans that I follow on Twitter. Just really mixed reviews about the book. Like, none of them say it's awful, but some of them say like it's amazing, great insight, whatever, and others are a bit like it's a bit disappointing. So I've been a bit put off by that, but I will read it. I will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sort of agree with that in parts. It's great to see. I've read it already. You can see how just obsessed he is with football from such an early age. That's quite impressive. But because he's such a classy bloke, he doesn't give you the juicy stuff you want.
Of course, but even then, I'm not fussed at all by, you know, him, you know, digging up dirt on people or slagging anyone off or like, oh, the feud with Mourinho and all this sort of stuff. I honestly couldn't care less about any of that. Like, it's more just I just want to hear what he thinks about stuff. Like, he's just for me such an interesting bloke that, you know, if, you know, the question of like, oh, what three people would you bring to dinner or whatever, like, he's always the one that I just want to be able to speak to, because I just find him, he's so interesting, so intelligent, and he's literally had such a huge part to play in my life, even though I've met him once. Like, it's just amazing. So I as long as it's got that sort of insight, that kind of personal storytelling sort of element to it, that'll be more than enough for me. So I will read it, I promise. Have you read it? Yeah, I have.
It is decent. Also, it's mad that he only managed teams that played in red and white. I didn't realize that till the book came out.
Oh god, yeah, Nagoya, Monaco, yeah.
Yeah, the book's called My Life in Red and White. I just presumed that was just Arsenal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Selfishly, we're just like, yeah, no, it's gotta be Arsenal or nothing.
That nextly, I want to find out your five-a-side dream team, Arsenal, past and present. I think I have mine.
I was literally saying this on Sunday. I was chatting to a few pals, and then this came up, so you just said it. But I would say you've got to have a goalie in it, but probably I'll go Jens. And then I'm just going to go real attacking and go Vieira, Bergkamp, Omri, Bergkamp, Henri, and maybe Van Persie. I'm just going for pure tech. So I'm just going to go Bergkamp, Henri, Van Persie, Vieira, Lehmann.
Okay, that's decent. I've gone Jens as well. I think I'd say Jens, just because, especially for either side, that it's quite a small pitch. I think Jens would be giving it to the other keeper, be giving it to all their heads.
Yeah, just mental case.
I've gone Ashley Cole at the back. There's no point getting a centre back in for either side, in my opinion, especially if you're keeping it below head height. Sol's going to be useless there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then Fabregas, Bergkamp, and Omri. That's what I've gone for.
I was close to Fabregas. Fabregas is a very, very special place in my heart as well. So, Cesc is a good one. It's close for me.
Now, you've done some work with Arsenal and have made connections with some of the players like we were speaking about, like Bellerin and Smith Rowe. Does that feel quite normal to you now? Because I imagine like your 14-year-old self probably wouldn't really believe it.
Yeah, it is. It's sort of a shame to say, but I guess the novelty does wear off of, you know, even not even just Arsenal, but like doing this sort of job where you obviously like chat to footballers and you present and stuff like that. Like at first, naturally, it's a bit overwhelming. It's really surreal. But then the more you do it, the more you get used to it, the more professional you become, the more experience you get, the less you're kind of daunted by the occasion and it's this person or that person. And they do just become people. It's weird. Like we exalt these footballers as like deities. Yeah. I mean, these are like gods that we look up to and that have been inspirations and the sort of, and then as soon as you start meeting them, you realize like, oh, these, you know, for the most part, they're really nice, but you might be like, oh, this person's a bit weird or a bit moody or they're all normal people. Mm-hmm. And you know, it just, when it comes to Arsenal players and them kind of, as I said, like having a special place in your heart and stuff. And naturally it means a lot, but then it does just become normal in a way. It's, you know, it's both like the perks and I guess the natural kind of conclusion of like your job is that you get to meet all these people that you love and you idolize or whatever. And then the novelty does wear off, but I think it would be maybe a little bit weird if the novelty didn't wear off. It would be a bit odd. So it's great. Like it's to be able to, especially like work so close with Arsenal and get to know the players and stuff. It's like an added bonus. It's not like, you know, this makes or breaks me. And like, without this, I'll be devastated. It's more just like, it's, you know what, it's amazing that I get to work so close to the club I love and get to know and get to chat to the players that, you know, I watch every week and that I want to do well. It's now sort of like not. I don't think about it anymore. It just kind of just happens for some reason. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. Now it wouldn't be right to talk about your career without touching on your time at Copper 90, and especially as it seems like a sort of iconic part of the journey for a lot of amazing presenters and creators in the football space. But you started just on the social media side of things, right? So how different is the Michael that joined Copper 90 to the Michael that left as a person?
Oh, as a person. That's a great question. I think when I joined, so I was just kind of straight out of uni or took some time off after uni. And then it was literally like my first proper job was like as an intern. I was sort of just testing the water as, you know, I guess a mid-20s or early 20s guy does. I know I like football. I can speak a little bit and I can write. And, you know, I'd always sort of been interested in like journalism or chatting to people and stuff. It's just like, it's what I figured that I'd like. But I never really knew that at that point, it was like, that's what I wanted to do. It was more just like, this is a cool opportunity. So, I did that. And then slowly kind of for one reason or another, I got introduced on camera and started doing more presenting stuff. I was just sort of enjoying it. I'm look back at myself quite enviously in that I was so in the moment and I was so concentrated on just like working and not thinking too much about the future or what does this mean if I do this next shoot? This is going to be amazing. And looking back on like, this is all the amazing stuff I've done or anything like that. It was just more, I was so, I guess in the present and just focused on the job at hand And in a way, yeah, like now I'm sort of, because I'm all grown up and I guess more experience and I've done this for quite a while now and moved into a kind of now a freelance role and stuff. Like I feel like I know the gravity of stuff more. Like even though I'm not like I'm daunted by shoots or anything like that anymore, but it's more like I understand how big or small or how kind of important everything is now compared to when I first joined or in the first 2-3 years or whatever, when I was doing my stuff, it was like, I did a really big shoot and it was like, okay, cool. On to the next one sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But I guess that's the nature of the job as well. It's so fast paced, like football media. So, but now that I guess now that I'm freelance and I can kind of control my time a lot more, I have a lot more time to kind of reflect and think about things, which is both a blessing and a curse, I guess, because it can get a bit long and it can get a bit like, you know, daunting, I guess, but also it's great because I can take time to relax and I can, you know, think about things more, like what I really like and what I don't like. So I'd say, yeah, I was more at the beginning, I was more innocent and sort of just, yeah, innocently like enjoying my first job and just going at it 100% and giving everything. And now I'm kind of a bit more weathered and cynical. No, I'm joking. Now it's like, it's just because I'm more experienced, I'm more, I don't know. Yeah, I think about things a lot more now, but I don't know. I guess that's just a sign of getting older, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We all yearn for those days where we'd just run. The rake would hit us in the face, but would keep running.
Yeah, exactly.
That changes over time, unfortunately. But exactly. Your transition from behind camera to on camera seemed like quite a smooth one because of the relationship you had with Poet and Vooj. Was that scary or did that just feel natural?
No, but that's what I was saying. Like, it wasn't scary at all because I didn't even know. I didn't even feel like anything was happening. I felt like it was such a natural progression from being off camera, doing tweets and kind of working on edits and all this sort of stuff to being on camera and presenting and being a part of, you know, that presenting world to then having my own show and all this sort of stuff. Like, I felt like it was such a natural progression that I didn't bat an eyelid. I didn't think like, oh wow, I've got this. And now thinking back, I was like, wow, I have my own show. And like, I did a whole branded series with Addy and traveled here and did this and whatever. So it was like, that's why I always feel really bad whenever anyone asks me, like, I'd love to do stuff like what you're doing or like, how did you get to where you, and I was like, I honestly sort of don't even know how I got to do what I'm doing, because it was like I was so lucky that I joined somewhere that was so, I guess, open to like new things and pushing everyone to do what they wanted to do and sort of thing, like that I didn't second guess like, oh, is this what I really want to do, whatever. It was just like, I really love what I'm doing, I'm so grateful, let's just keep doing it. So yeah, it was like the most natural thing in the world to me. I didn't really feel like, oh my god, like they're putting me on camera now and stuff. Like at the beginning I was really nervous. I remember the first few shoots I was bricking it, like didn't know what I was doing really, like as in you know, I remember what Tom, the producer at the time, he's like, mate, just don't worry, relax, be yourself. I was like, I don't even know what myself is. You know what I mean? I'm just like, you're telling me to present these things. And I'm like, I don't know. All I know what to do is like play football and like chat to people. I don't know. And it was just literally through that and just doing it. And that's the beauty of YouTube, I guess, is that you just keep churning stuff out, trial and error, and you get better. And then it just became, yeah, I guess what I do now. It was, yeah, it was a very natural kind of career arc, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing, though, that I think viewers don't see or maybe don't think about too much is like the stress of having, for example, you might have like 10 minutes or so with a player that I imagine sometimes doesn't want to be there. Or yeah, you could be waiting for hours to get those 10 minutes. But have there been any shoots that have been like excruciatingly hard to get good content out of?
Yes and no. Like there's been no like footballer that has been just a pain in the ass or has purposely made things hard for me or anything like that. You are right. Like it is one of the things that people don't see or maybe don't quite consider is that like some shoots are so pressurized that like
it's, yeah, you will literally have, you're supposed to have 45 minutes with this one player, and you've got this whole shoot that you've got planned with these sets of questions and then this segment that you want to do and take, and eventually they're like, right, we've got 7 minutes, you've got to do it now, or you're not going to do it. And there's so much pressure and so much riding on such a small amount of time with a player that, you know, ultimately you have no control over. You can do your bit, but if they're not receptive, or if they decide to do whatever they want to do, like, that's literally out of your control. And I think the more you do it, and now I'm at a point where, like, I'm so, I guess, at ease with the fact that it's not really up to me. Like at the beginning, and because, you know, I guess I was younger, and I think a lot of people find this at the beginning, is that, like, you're so desperate to do well, you're so desperate for it to be a good shoot. And naturally, the same thing today, like I want every shoot to be the best shoot I've ever done. But it's more, I think you wrap yourself up in it so much more at the beginning, because, you know, it's what you're doing, and you feel like you have a massive part to play, and that, like, I need to smash this or whatever. Whereas now I'm so at ease with the fact that, like, look, I'm going to do my bit. I'll have a good time. I'll see if they want to have a good time as well. And if we do, great. Yeah, on the whole, though, it's the process is quite, it is a bit stressful and pressurized, but for the most part, 95% of the time, it goes on without a hitch. And you know, the player's lovely. You get more or less the time that you needed to do it. And that's it.
Mm-hmm. Have there been any players that seem to go above and beyond to immerse themselves in the interview or the activity?
Yeah, there's loads, to be fair. Like most players are really good sports, and they'll do, you know, a bit more than the minimum. That, you know, they're not going to just give you these really glib answers and everything. It's, you know, they'll bring out their personality a little bit, and they'll warm up, and they'll want to come across well, because I think it is in most footballers', you know, best interest to come across well in especially online. But a few players that kind of come to mind are like Oxlade-Chamberlain, which I think everyone knows is a really, really nice bloke. Honestly, one of the nicest humans I've ever met is Kaká, like, let alone just nicest footballers, nicest people I've ever met. And like Vood will attest to that as well. Like, he's honestly one of the nicest guys. But I mean, the list goes on. Like, I could say, dude, Hector Bellerin, I could say Aubameyang, I could say whoever, Calvin Phillips. Just so many people that I've been lucky enough to chat to. Like, they're all lovely.
Class, that is class. Do you think that, or why do you think that players are generally just more receptive to this style of media engagement as opposed to like more formal formats?
I think they can be themselves a bit more. And I think they're also, it's in a way, it's a reflection of what they're doing, or the person even doing the interview. Like, I think if the person, you know, not that you have to always be like this, but like if the person doing the interview or chatting to them is relaxed and is straight away, you can just tell that, you know, they're up for a laugh and it's really lighthearted and stuff, that they are going to immediately be put at ease and they'll be receptive to, you know, what you're doing. You know, if you had a really, really serious interview but you dressed up like as a clown literally, then they'll be like, well, what's going on? But like, because I think they get the feeling from you whether you're being really serious, whether you're joking about, and they feed off of that. But also, I think it is a sign of the times, though, with footballers that naturally social media obligations and like online profile and stuff is so much more important and so much more widespread than it was even 10 years ago, that naturally now, like, footballers are just more used to it. So in 10 years time, unless there's some kind of weird regulations that come in into for privacy or confidentiality or whatever, like in 10 years time, you'll see every single footballer be super receptive, super open to doing loads of different stuff. But it's just because, you know, back in the day, there was very few, you know, media obligations and interviews. Now you've got interviews before the game, half time, end of the game and stuff. Whereas before it was like end of the game, chat to a player or chat to a manager, and that was it. And there was no, you know, social media day. Like, so every club has media days that they kind of block out for brand partnerships and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I'm guessing 20 years ago, there wouldn't really have been as many, you know, every Wednesday or every Thursday, boom, there's a media day because we've got this partner coming in and you have to be, you know, dressed up and do whatever the person says you have to do because you're a representation of the club. So representative of the club, sorry. So yeah, for the most part, it's always pretty chilled and they're always good value.
Mm-hmm. One of my favourite videos of yours, especially in your time at Copper 90, was when you had Marco Reus train you and was there in your ear playing against Vooch, who was trained by Axel Witsel, because he seemed like such a good sport. And we got to see future Arsenal star Michael Timms on the ball.
I'm 28, but I'm still hoping to maybe get like a 1 or 2 week trial.
Future wonder kid.
Yeah, exactly.
But what was your favourite video of that era?
So that, for me, that was probably, that's what a lot of people that I've chatted to say is their kind of favourite video as well, which is like a really big, it is quite a big source of pride for me just because it's an idea that myself and my friend Kai drew up because, you know, as I progressed kind of through Copper and started doing less social media stuff, but more kind of actual like shooting and production stuff, that I had more, I guess, obligations as almost like a producer or like a creative to come up with ideas and help execute shoots and stuff. And that was in a response to a brief from Puma saying, you know, we have these three kind of launch dates for different boots over the season. And we'd love to do like a partnership or like a video series. But if you had access to players, what would you do? And so yeah, me and Kai just sat down and we just chatted through it and we're like, wow, this, and then it just, you know, for some reason it just, things happen and one idea gets evolved into another and gets slightly flipped into another, and then it just came up at the end, we're like, wow, I think we've got something special here, because we'd never seen anyone do anything like that before. Like I to this day I still haven't seen that. So to actually come up with that idea and really plan it out and then to see it come to life, you know, in these videos that were really popular and that were received so well and that the players really enjoyed as well, I think that's when you know that you've had like a big hit, which was nice. So that was, from a personal point of view, that was definitely a highlight of mine. And then there was like the series that I had with Adi, the, you know, playing football with, I mean, look, like playing football with professional footballers for a series is sort of like surreal. So naturally that's kind of my, I guess, my highlight, but all of it for different reasons, like my whole time there doing different things. It is all kind of one big highlight reel, I guess.
Mm-hmm. What about going freelance? Was that quite a scary move to make?
Yes and no. At the beginning, yeah, because obviously it's unknown territory and I didn't know whether I was like, not that I was any good, but that, you know, Copper was always my safety blanket. And, you know, I'd started as a 23, 24-year-old and worked till I was a 20, I guess, 7-year-old, 26, 7. And doing that, I was always like, no matter what happened, you know, if I was presenting or not, or if something went well or not, it was fine because at the end of the month, I was always paid. I always felt like needed. And, you know, it was home. It was so secure that I knew I was okay. And then deciding to go freelance was obviously a big step. And at the beginning, yeah, as I said, I was nervous because I don't know if people will want me. I don't know if I'm actually any good compared to anyone else. All I know is that I enjoy it. And for some reason, people like some of the stuff that I do. But then, yeah, after, you know, when I announced that I was freelance and then after a week or two, seeing the kind of responses and stuff, then I was like, okay, I'm okay. And yeah, since then it's been on the whole, it's been good, man. Obviously it's been a tough year for a lot of people, and so many people have had it so much worse than me, so I can't complain in any way. But just from a personal point of view, like it's had a lot of ups and downs, not being freelance, but this year has had a lot of ups and downs that, you know, I've had to deal with. But yeah, I've always kind of, I think I'm quite a positive person anyway, so I'm sort of just, I always try and look at the positive side of things and just keep, you know, I find solace in working hard and just getting your head down and grafted, just because I think that it helps in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like it's really you're benefiting from breaking through that sort of fear barrier. I guess everyone feels that, a bit of imposter syndrome sometimes, right? Especially sure, in situations like that.
Yeah, I feel like this is what's worked for me. One of the most one of the things that has been most kind of that has consistently worked for me is just doing stuff. I don't know. It's weird. Like getting your head down and just diving into stuff, not to say like recklessly kind of, you know, not planning anything or whatever, but just like saying yes to things is so important. And I, even since, you know, the day I joined Copper and straight away, like just saying yes to anything that they asked me to do. And that's not to say driving yourself, you know, working yourself down to the bone and you're fried and mentally you're fatigued and all this sort of stuff, but more just like being open, like not being a closed-minded or kind of cut off person, like being so open and willing to just say yes to things, like whether it's stuff that you're scared to do, or if you're jumping out of a plane and skydiving, whatever it is. But just like, I think the more you're open and the more you're willing to say yes to stuff and being enthusiastic about just doing things, the more I think you find out about yourself and you expand as a person. And that professionally, that's one of the biggest things that I've learned and that has been so key to me kind of, I guess, progressing, is that I've always been willing and I always want to be willing to just say yes to things. Mm-hmm. Because even then, if you're inexperienced or whatever, you just learn on the job. You just learn by doing. And it's not to say, you know, obviously you need to be good, or, you know, if you say yes to something and you're crap, then you might not get called back for something, or, you know, but just saying yes to stuff is so important. And that's, yeah, it's definitely something that's worked for me.
It seems like going freelance has given you the chance and maybe the time to throw yourself into some real like fitness challenges as well, and self-development stuff. And coming up soon, like I said, this episode is going out after the next challenge, but you're doing 4 miles every 4 hours, four to eight hours, right?
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
A little bit nervous, but it's just more, you know, I like, as I said, I like kind of just saying yes to stuff and just doing things, because I feel like, yeah, you just find out more about yourself. And physical challenges is always something that's interested me as well. And, you know, I don't mind running and stuff. So as soon as this came up, and naturally as well, it's just, as you said before, like lockdown and this pandemic and everything, it's like every day becomes so monotonous that sometimes you just need to shake something up just to feel some life back in you. You know what I mean? And this is just one way. I said, like at the beginning, when this kind of challenge came up and my mate Will asked me, like, do you want to do it? I was like, yeah, fuck, why not? Because we'd been in lockdown for however long, and it's another 2 months until the end of lockdown and all that. So I was like, nothing else is going to be happening, so why not? Like, I just, it gets me out of the house, and it really focuses my mind on something that isn't wake up, it's a pandemic, it's lockdown, try and occupy myself and then go to bed. Yeah, I mean, like it gives me like direction. So yeah, I've got that challenge up coming up and stuff. But equally then, it's just like, as soon as that's done and we're out of this pandemic, it's not like straight away I just want to get back to normal life and get back to, you know, going to bars and all this sort of stuff. Like, now I just want to keep, you know, living as much as possible. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it, but we'll see. I if you chat to me on the Monday and I'm there and I can't walk again, then I'll probably give you a different answer.
Yeah, well, you can listen back to this after you've done it and say, I was foolish, man, what was I thinking?
Exactly.
Are you going to be documenting it like you did for the 7 marathons in 7 days?
Yeah, so I'll be filming it. I want to make I'm still kind of deciding what I want to do with my own YouTube and stuff, just because at the moment it's not like my full focus, just because I'm obviously presenting for BBC and EA Sports and all that sort of stuff. So I'm just like focusing on that because that's what I do, you know, it's where I get my money and all that sort of stuff. But I will be documenting it. Because it's interesting, or I find it interesting anyway, so I might as well do it. And I don't know. Is it, as I said, with my YouTube, I'm at a bit of a crossroads, or a bit of a writer's block, or the equivalent of a writer's block, where like I'm not sure what I want to do with it. And, you know, there's a lot of, not self-doubt, but like consideration that goes into, you know, doing YouTube and putting yourself out there and stuff, that like, you know, when it's going well, it's great. You don't even need to think about it. You just push stuff out. It's great. And then other times when obviously things have been a bit flat, and like this year, for example, like it feels like you're always going from zero and you're trying, you know, going from like a stagnant position to, right, I've got to come up with something. But yeah, so for this, I'm just, I'm just yeah, might as well. I was like, might as well just document it, see what happens, you know, and then go from there.
Yeah, man, you should. You definitely should. I've really enjoyed the seven marathons in 7 days, because even though you got injured, and I know you were gutted about that, but from a viewer's perspective, it seemed to just turn into like the most wholesome experience. It looked like a London takeover as well.
No, yeah, honestly, that was, and that is when I thought to myself, I was like, when you, yeah, exactly, say yes to stuff and really test yourself and push yourself, like, amazing things like can happen. Like, and it was obviously like I did it because obviously with the whole Black Lives Matter movement that was going on, that's still going on, but that kind of really flared up at that point, and I wanted to help out and stuff. Like, it was to raise money for that, but also because it was such a big challenge. And you know, I'm lucky enough to have so many like good friends and know people that care about, you know, they're nice people. That I think it was a real like wave of, I guess, like human, I guess, sympathy or emotion, or I don't know. It was just like a really powerful week that I now look back on, and it's like, that is honestly one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done. And you know, for selfishly, like, it's obviously not about that. It's about making like getting as much money as possible and supporting. But just from a personal point of view, it was a really, it was a special week in my life for sure.
How did you feel directly after that? Because sometimes with those sort of challenges, people can feel quite deflated, almost like their purpose has been taken away.
I didn't feel deflated. I felt a bit useless because I was there. I was like, I've done five, and then my knees blew up and I'm like, I can't even walk now. And I felt a little bit. Yeah, maybe a little bit flat, but it wasn't like, you know, I was like down in the dumps, like, oh my God, I've done it. And now what do I do with my life? It's like, no, I know what I'm going to do. I've got work again. So I've just got to focus on what I'm doing. But it was, it was definitely kind of an extreme high to see that many people involved and to do, you know, a good thing to then just kind of normality again. But there was no sort of negative from it at all. It was just, I just couldn't walk for like 3 weeks, which was a bit crap because I was limping everywhere and I had to do rehab and stuff, which was like, but now obviously I'm okay now. Well, fingers crossed anyway.
What do you enjoy most about these challenges? Is it the mental achievement or mainly the physical side?
Physically, no, it is the mental thing, because it's all about, you know, pushing yourself. I just feel like, as I said, like the more you do, and especially things that really put your mind and body to the test, that's when you really find out what you're made of. Mm. And not even finding out what you're made of in like a egotistical way. It's like, oh, show yourself how great you are. It's not even that. It's more just like proving to yourself that you are capable of so much more than you think you are. And this is not to say in any way that I'm like a physical beast or whatever. Like, there are people who are millions of times better than me at any sort of running physical activity, but like, just from a personal experience, like, I remember the first run I did over like 10k years and years and years ago, and then I was thinking like, bloody hell, that was so hard. And then do it a little bit more and you get better, and then did my marathon and I was bricking it for my first marathon. I was like, what am I doing? I'm running 26 miles and all this sort of crap, and all I've seen are videos of people like, can I swear?
Yeah.
Okay, videos of people like shitting themselves and like passing out and all this. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, this is mental. Like, and then after having done it, I felt so good. I was like, oh my God, I've just done a marathon. Like, that's so cool. And then it's just these challenges, especially, I guess, physical challenges that test you mentally and test your limits. That's when you find out that like your limits are nowhere near as small as you think they are. Like, you are capable of so much that. That's why I guess these challenges are, one, it's just a good thing to do. And I love, you know, doing physical stuff anyway, because I feel like it makes me, you know, feel alive. But also, just they're like constant, you know, everyone lives in their own like bubble, like that's your life.
Yeah.
And the more things like these you do, it's not even have to be physical challenges. It can be just saying yes to a big job, or it can be moving to a new city or whatever. It's like, the more stuff you do, the bigger your bubble gets, like the more life you get to experience. And I feel like that is such a healthy thing. That's what I've kind of made sure I do. I just like however frequently I feel I need it, just do something that really pushes me outside of my comfort zone, because then you just, you know, you just do more stuff and you experience more life, as pathetic as that sounds. Like, it just
no, I know exactly what you mean. I completely agree as well. It's impossible to talk about those things without sounding a little bit corny sometimes, you know.
Of course, yeah, but there's obviously, in these kind of age-old truths, there are nuggets of, you know, wisdom that I guess we can pick up on, and just it's just something that's worked for me. I was like, the more things I experienced and like I can kind of count on myself, like the better it is. So that's it really. That's kind of my I guess, I don't know, the something I've just developed and that I want to just keep doing.
Yeah. Have you ever had a time in your life where you've had like a mental health challenge to conquer, or have you always been on this like consistent, constant journey, I guess?
I've only even considered like myself being even like just alive, like consciously, like know what I'm doing, whatever, for the last like few years, really. Like I didn't, all the way from when you're a kid up to honestly till I was about 24, 25, I was just living. I was basically like a newborn baby. I didn't know what I was doing, just living, doing stuff. And, you know, you develop your quirks and your personality traits and all this sort of stuff. But like, it's only really been over the last few years have I really like thought about like life and my life and realized that I'm in here. You know what I mean? Like it's weird, but I've been so lucky that I haven't had any sort of like mental problems or anything like really kind of mentally draining or like arduous up until like this year. And when I say this year, I mean like 2021, like even throughout lockdown and all of that, like it was fine. I've always been positive and just tried to keep myself busy, but not been too hard on myself. And it's like, I'm not like, I wasn't one of those ones who felt like, oh shit, I need to be doing stuff. And, you know, it's like, it's the middle of a global pandemic. You don't owe anyone anything. Like you don't even owe yourself, I need to learn this new thing or whatever. I need to feel like I'm progressing. Like, no, the people who run countries don't even know what they're doing. So how is a normal person supposed to know what they're doing? So, but it's literally only been since the start of this year, 2021, and this lockdown that I've genuinely like, not struggled, but overthought to the point of it is sort of like paralyzing. Like, I don't know if that's even like normal or if this is just not even a big deal, but like that for me has been kind of illuminating that I've never struggled with it at all. And then this literally over the last, like, so was it 2nd of March now? Like the last 2 months have been like really tough, probably the toughest in my life, just because I involve myself up in so much in my work. Like I find so much purpose in my life through work that if I'm not working, I do just genuinely feel useless. And I guess quite a lot of people, you know, feel like that they're so attached to their career and, you know, it's like my job is my calling and I'm, you know, all this sort of crap. But like, I enjoy what I do so much and that I'm so thankful and I find so much direction and, yeah, as I said, purpose from what I do, that if I'm not doing it consistently or I don't feel like I'm doing it enough to feel like I'm going somewhere, I just feel like lost.
Mm.
And that's been like really eye-opening for me because I'd never felt like that before. So like the last 2 months, genuinely, it's mad. Like, honestly, maybe last year, if you reached out and you said like, oh, I'd love to chat about football, and I was like, oh yeah, I'll do it sometime, whatever. But like, when I saw it and it sort of, I thought to myself, I was like, this is, I don't know, it's like not meant to be, but like, it's something I've been thinking about a lot more. So the last 2 months have been as hard as I can remember it being in my entire life. But then again, I know that this is not, you know, some people are going through so much harder stuff that like, I can't, as I said, I can't complain. I just got to, you know, deal with it and just get through it and know that things will get better.
Yeah, that is important to bear in mind. But also, I feel like a lot of people are at risk of like undermining how they feel about stuff. Like you are in your own head. So problems are all relative, right? A millionaire has problems, a billionaire has problems, someone with no money has problems. And to each person, those problems feel just as important. So I think it's important. It's amazing that you've started to notice that. But also, just because people have it worse doesn't mean that you can't feel shitty.
Of course, yeah. No, of course. And I know that deep down, but also I feel like I'm fine. Like I always just think, like I say this a lot as well, but like I know that deep down, like, I'm okay. And that I almost feel like I'm not as important as like other people, or like the well-being of other, as long as everyone else is okay, I'll be okay. So that's sort of always been my mindset. It's like, as long as my mom and my dad are all right, as long as my brother and my sisters are okay, like as long as my friends and my family, as long as everyone else is fine, I'm cool. So I always have thought about it like that. That's always sort of been my mindset, that I'm like, I'm the least of my priorities, when realistically I should be the top of my priority list, because you always have to look after yourself the most, because if you're not yourself, it's weird because I know these things, but then I just don't take my own advice, or I'm just like, nah, it's fine. Like, as long as they're okay, as long as other people are okay, that's fine. But then this is literally the first time I feel like I've gone through this. So I guess it's all a learning curve anyway. Like, I need to learn, you know, what these feelings are actually like and stuff, you know. I need to kind of live through it and you know, see you know, what works for me and what doesn't work and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I understand that, like, I need to look after myself and I need to make sure I don't undermine and don't value kind of like the importance of my mental well-being and all that sort of stuff. But I've always kind of like put it to the side, just because it's like, as long as, you know, I'm working and everyone else is okay, I'll be fine. So, it's mad that you kind of said this, that, yeah, it's only over the last like 2 months that I've really felt like not myself, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough one. I think like yourself, and I do this as well, I think everyone does it in modern society. When people ask like who we are, we would normally say our job role, or we'd say like, part of a family, but like, and that makes it quite hard to identify who you actually are. Do you know what I mean? Like, if someone asked me who I am, I'd say I'm a student. I have a podcast. You'd probably say you're a presenter. So you don't really talk about who you are when those things are gone.
No, it is true. Like, but I've always said, like, when someone says, like, what do you do? I sort of, because the way I look at things as well, is like, I don't even say, like, I'm a presenter. If someone asks, like, what do you do as a career? Like, what's your job? I say, like, I'm a presenter or whatever, but it's like, what do you do? It's like, I don't even know what I do. I just like chat. Like, as in, like, yeah, if you want to define it, it is, I guess, presenting or host or whatever it is. But like, I don't know. I just live and do stuff. It's not, I don't know. It's such a, I know it's a very general and kind of flippant way of putting it, but like, yeah, I've always thought like that anyway. But anyway, sorry, I'm rambling.
No, it's fine. I'm all about ramen on this podcast. Are you still doing the Wim Hof method?
Yeah, so I'm doing that. So the annoying thing is I don't have like a proper bath to do like ice baths, or like I don't have a local like lake. I'm really envious of people who live in like Norway or Canada who just jump into frozen lakes. I'm like, I want that to be me. But yes, I'm still doing that. I've been interested in that for like quite a while now, like a few years. But it's my brother bought me the book for Christmas, so I've been reading that and adopting those kind of like his method, which is great. It's been really, really good.
Similarly, actually, I'm sort of just starting to get into some of the methods, having cold showers and stuff like that. And a bit like yourself, I've, the last few months, sometimes I felt like I've lacked a bit of purpose. So I'm trying to add things like that, waking up a bit earlier, getting my day started well, maybe meditating, writing, exercise. Yeah, I think a lot of, I've only just really thought about that. I've actually felt quite similar.
It's like, even with the biggest thing for me with Wim Hof is that it is really good for you. I think like mentally it's great. Obviously he has a host of like health benefits anyway, but just even, for example, cold water therapy, or like whatever you want to call it, you know, cold exposure or whatever, like what I've noticed is it is so calming. Instead, but before, when you first start it, it's like it shocks you, and it literally feels like the shittest thing in the world because you're like, what am I doing? But even like knowing the health benefits aside, just the fact that the cold, like, really genuinely brings you into the moment that you can't really focus on much else. So it's like, you know, when people do like run and they have runners high and they zone out and all this sort of thing, anything that when you're doing it, the only thing you're thinking about is what you're doing. I think that's a really special thing. And like the cold showers or cold baths or ice baths or whatever, like, not only does it help you like health wise and it's great for inflammation and all that, but it's also mentally, it really brings you into the present, which I think is really, really important. And same with the breathing as well. Like, the breathing is great as well. So, but yeah, as you said, like, doing these little things, like, I've always been interested in like health and wellness and trying to be the healthiest I can be and trying to, you know, just progress just by doing stuff that I think in, as you said, like in lockdown and all that, it's like, it's so easy to just get bogged down by just not doing much or whatever. And it's like, you are under no obligation to anyone to do anything or to learn anything or be a better human. You know what I mean? Like, we're all locked indoors. What are you supposed to do? But anything like this, I think, helps. So whether it is, waking up early, or if it is meditating, or if it's writing, or if it's learning an instrument or whatever it is, it all helps. Just focus your mind, and I guess like take your mind off of the thousand things you can think about, and it just focuses it on one or two things, which I think is really good. So that's one of the biggest things that I've learned with the Wim stuff. So I'm definitely going to keep doing that, and it's really addictive as well, man. Better than any coffee you'll ever have, I promise you.
Yeah, it does feel incredible. When you come out of a cold shower, you do feel like alive for the first time.
First thing in the morning, or if you wake up, do some exercise, you go for a run, whatever, you get back. And then I have a warm shower and then turn it to cold for a few minutes. You come out and you just feel alive. It's honestly, it's like indescribable though.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of people hear it and they're like, ah, fuck it, that's mental. Why? I love a hot shower. It's like, I love a hot shower as well. I love a hot bath. I love little bubbles and everything. But there's something about the cold that really fires up your body. It's weird, but it's really addictive.
Now, I know you're an avid reader as well. In the last few years, you're on Instagram, you look like a very avid reader.
I'm trying to do more. Yeah, I'm trying to read more.
But in the last few years, has there been a book or maybe like a method, even like a video, something that has sort of had the biggest impact on your life so far in the last few years?
There's been a few. The one that I'm reading at the moment or rereading is the Path, which is nice. There's been a few, but I wouldn't even say like this. I've found some really, really great books that are not even like self-help books. They're just like fictions, or they're like mini science fiction, like short stories or whatever. But the one that really affected me before Christmas was the 5 a.m. Club. And that's interesting. That's what, so Addy were kind enough to send me a few running bits. And as part of that, they included that book. I think it was just a nice care package that they sent in kind of late October, early November. And I started reading it, and it was just like fascinating. I don't know. It really, you know, when something just like you read it and it just makes sense.
Yeah.
And it really motivates you. It's like super uplifting, super inspiring. So I just started doing that and waking up at 5 a.m. And I did that. And that was literally as what is now our second lockdown, you know, the one from November to December or whatever it was. When that happened, I was like, right, for the whole of lockdown, I'm going to wake up at 5 a.m. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to wake up at 5 a.m. And it was literally just because of that book. And I did it. And weirdly, I've recorded it all, and I was going to make a YouTube video, but then at the end, I just didn't feel like I wanted to put it out. But I did that for a month, and it was great. And that had a really big effect on me. I'd say 5 a.m. Club for me was quite an important book.
Yeah. I haven't got around to reading it yet, but I've listened to a few like book reviews of it. And it seems amazing how I can sort of relate to it. When you wake up earlier, you just feel in tune with everything around you, right?
Yeah, no, but that's exactly right. And I think like, and even then, I'm not waking up at 5 a.m. now. I'm going to probably when the weather picks up, I'll get back on the 5 a.m. But it was like, it wasn't easy. Like, it was quite hard to do that, especially because the weather started to get so cold, and trying to do that over December and Jan would have been horrific. Mm-hmm. But 5 a.m. because I did it for a month, and I saw how kind of, as you say, how in tune you are when you wake up that early, and how at peace you are, and how much you can get done. It's definitely something I'm gonna do kind of from spring onwards. So probably from like end of March, April, when the weather picks up, it's so much easier to wake up at 5 a.m. It's just great to kind of get a head start on the day. So I'll definitely be doing that soon.
Yeah, same. I'll be there with you, man. Don't worry.
Yeah, okay, do it. But I would say, honestly, but a lot of things, read it first, though. Like, with anything, if you pick up something just because someone tells you to do it, it's not a sustainable way of doing that thing and maintaining it as a life habit or as a beneficial thing. Like, it's so much easier to motivate yourself to do something if you really understand the reasons, if you read or listen for yourself to why you should be doing it and the benefits, rather than just like me. That's why I would never tell anyone to do anything. I would never tell anyone to wake up at 5 a.m. or be vegan or do a marathon or whatever. I would never tell anyone, because that's not the way you, I think, really kind of inspire people to do stuff. It's more there's an element of like, you have to do your own work and your own research to really convince yourself to do it. And same thing with the 5 a.m. stuff. I'll just say, like, if you're interested in doing it, great, but just read it first, like, because then you'll know whether you really want to do it. Mm-hmm. I'll say read it. You can have my book if you want.
Sounds good, mate. Sounds good. it's clear also that you love learning and speaking foreign languages. I needed to touch on this before we time out on the episode. Right. But I know you're fluent in English, of course, Spanish and French, and speak pretty good Portuguese, I believe. But where did this interest come from? I don't think I missed it any there either.
No. But my Portuguese, to be fair, it's not pretty. It's like, my Portuguese is fine. It's like,
right,
okay. It's basic conversational stuff, because I only learned that for like 2 years at uni. So I can hold a basic conversation, but it's nowhere near as good as like my French and Spanish. So I just started learning it when I was a kid, like properly. I started learning it kind of maybe once a week at primary school, but it was more secondary school when you could pick it up as a language. I picked up French from year seven, and then year nine I picked up Spanish as well, and just did those all the way through. But it was more I think it was more because from when I was a kid, my family, my dad has been obsessed with France for as long as I can remember. So any little chance to get away on a holiday, he would always just say, right, we're going to France, we go camping, or go to go to a hotel, or go to Paris or whatever. And it was just from there, I think from being exposed to it from such a young age, was so beneficial, and it helped me pick up the language so much. So it was just from there, from when I was a kid. Same as like, you know, my big sister and my brother as well. They're both really, really good at French. And my dad's fluent as well. He lives there now. So it's, the languages have played a really important part of not just my family's kind of life. And that, I guess, is one thing. I contradict myself now, but that languages are honestly one thing that I would say I would encourage people to do, just because, purely from personal experience, that I know how much I would not be doing what I'm doing today if it wasn't for languages. It's not that you need to learn every language or whatever, but just like learning a language and the host of benefits that it brings you, from obviously being able to speak to people in their own language. It gives you a better appreciation for your own language, for understanding people's difference in culture and their views on stuff, and why they live how they live and why they do what they do, and all that sort of stuff. Like, it just opens a lot of doors, I think, for people if you learn languages. So yeah, that's been a massive part of my life, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see you put these skills to the test in videos as well, like translating for Messi on stage at an Adidas event, speaking French with Zidane several times. Do you think it's fair to say, like you touched on there, that this USP of yours has and will continue to take you to places that others might struggle to hold their own in?
Yeah, it's not even like others might struggle, whatever. Like, there are people miles better than me at French and Spanish, but you know, that are presenters that can do what I do and you know, add their own flavor to it. But it's more just from a personal point of view, like whether anyone else, it's me up against anyone else. It doesn't really matter. I just think, like, for me, I give myself the best chance of being able to do as much as possible if I speak these languages. And I've seen it happen. Like, as I said, like, I love just saying yes to stuff. And the Messi thing that came in, like, when in my life am I ever going to be able to interview Messi live on stage in Moscow six months before the World Cup? Like, that's, if I didn't speak Spanish and if I hadn't spoken Spanish in on shoots for the previous 6 or 7 months that Adidas saw I was like good enough at, they wouldn't have invited me to do it, because like, it just, the way it came about was so bizarre. But they just said they needed someone who could speak Spanish because Messi was coming, and they just said, look, you film with us before, we trust you, we like you, so do you want to do it? And obviously I had to say, I was bricking it, but I had to say yes, just because that's, when am I ever going to do that? So it has helped me, you know, I think even beyond what I think the importance of it is, I think it's been one of the main reasons why I get to do what I do now. And fingers crossed, like I'll have more opportunities in the future. And you know, if Japan, I want to start learning Japanese now just because I want to go to the Olympics and stuff. So it's just stuff like that. Like I might, if, you know, because I work with the BBC, I might be able to go to the Olympics if it happens. I might be able to go to Tokyo and work at the Olympics, because it would be a dream of mine, because who wouldn't want to do that as well? But it's more also, I've realized the importance of learning, of knowing the language. And I just want to put myself in the best position possible to be able to go. And if that's another thing that helps me, then I'll do it. So, it's definitely languages for me, as honestly, it's been so, so, so helpful.
Mm-hmm. That actually leads on quite nicely to the last part of this podcast, where I do long ball questions, as I like to call them. They're straight and direct. I've got two hypotheticals and two positive reflective questions. First one, what is your dream presenting job? Now, you can, if you want, you can create this event. It might not even exist, or it can be one that already does exist.
Dream presenting job would be, something like an anchor at, you know, like a proper presenting, I don't know, like Match of the Day, for example. I mean, look, I love Match of the Day, and I love Gary Lineker and, you know, Jermaine Genius, if he eventually become whatever. But like, I just think it's Match of the Day, isn't it? It's like, we literally grow up watching this as a kid. And to think that I would even now, like, I would even be working for the BBC and doing like Match of the Day X, and interviewing footballers for and it goes on Football Focus and stuff. Like, as a kid, like, I would never think in a million years I'd be doing that. So Match of the Day X, or like, no, probably, yeah, like, presenter of, like, anchor of Match of the Day will be outrageous. But even, yeah, Olympics would be great. Just that's the thing, I don't know. So I just want to see if I can do it. I want to find out how good something can be by doing it, rather than just someone telling me. I just, like, no, I want to do everything I can. So I'll probably say that.
Love it. I believe in you. I believe in you, man.
Thanks, man.
Next question. If you had to choose between never watching football again or never being able to speak a foreign language again, which would you choose?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so bad. But I think I'd probably say never a foreign language.
Yeah.
Just enough. Because it's football.
Obviously, there's more to language.
No, okay, of course, it's everything, right? Like, obviously, there's more to life than football. But football is such a massive part of my life. But then I love languages. I honestly don't know, because I even think, even without football. Wait, so never watching football again?
Never watch football. Yeah.
Can I play football?
You can play football, but, you know, how many years have you got left in you?
No, sorry. I've got a few years, mate. No, I would say, okay, well, in that case, because the only thing I like more than watching football is playing football. I love playing football so much. So I would say never watch football again, because I'll just play five-a-side or play 11s on Saturdays, and then I'd use my languages and do other presenting stuff and just live.
I feel like I've caused you a bit of stress.
No, internally as well. I feel a bit like, wow, I don't know. I'm questioning myself now.
Okay, and last two questions, some positive reflective questions for this time. What is the best day of your life so far?
Oh my God.
the best day of my life. Have people given you proper answers for this?
I've never asked this one before, actually.
Wow. Okay.
Maybe if whatever comes to mind, it doesn't need to be like the best per se.
No, yeah, I just like from a personal point of view, I don't. Professionally, I would say it's either the messy one, it's the messy interview, or maybe present for England.
Mm.
But then personally, I've honestly, one of the happiest days of my life is when my sister got married. Like, because I don't know, I've never seen her that happy, and I just started crying. That's I don't even bad. Know. I was like, what am I doing? Crying at my sister's wedding. I'm so pathetic. But I don't know. It was just, it was, that's the thing. As I said before, it's like, I get so much joy out of other people being happy. So to see my sister that happy made me fucking mad. Like, mm-hmm. I was so happy. So yeah, I'd probably say that.
That's nice, man. It says a lot about you as a person. Lovely stuff. And the final question, what about yourself are you most proud of?
My positivity, maybe, or yeah, I'd maybe say that positivity. Like, I don't know. I just try and stay positive, and I like making other people happy. So whatever that means, you know, if it's being a shoulder to cry on, or if it's presenting or doing a really funny video, or whatever, as like making people happy and bringing some sort of joy to people's lives, that's probably the proudest thing, you know, for me. I don't know. It's a bit egotistic, isn't it? I don't know. It's like I'm really proud of myself.
No, you've got to do it, man. You've got to be proud of yourself.
Of course, yeah. But I'd probably say that. Like, just making other people happy makes me happy. So if I can do that, that's what I'm proud of.
That's great, man. That's great. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Football.
Nice one, Liam. No, I appreciate it, man. Thank you. It's honestly, and also like what you're doing as well, and the podcast itself is obviously a really, really important thing. And especially like over the last 2 months, have I come to realize as well, like, really important. So I appreciate you having me on, man. Thank you.
Pleasure, mate. Welcome anytime. And thank you so much for opening up about some of that stuff there. I really do appreciate
it. Good, man. It's all good.
Thank you. And to the listener, thank you for tuning in to the Football and Feelings podcast. If you're new around here, maybe head over to the socials, find me on there. Just search Football and Feelings. You'll see me. But we'll wrap it up there. Thank you for tuning in. See you soon.